Reclaim continues to reverberate and possibly create an avalanche. In other churches too, huh? Possible. We'll look into that, along with a look at what's it like to be out of a parish for 6 months. So much to talk about today. This is Father Voskin, connecting the dots between the emotional, the spiritual, psychological, and physical. This is episode number 459 of The Next Step. Let's take it together right now.
Hi, this is Susie from In His Shoes, welcoming you to our 9th year of broadcasting The Next Step. The Next Step is a step, a stride, moving us forward. Here, Father Voskin provides his unique and distinctive voice for Armenian Orthodoxy, giving an intelligent and practical answer to the challenges of life, based on the solid principles of love, faith, and hope as expressed by Jesus Christ. It's a practical approach to melding spirit and passion in the real world. The Next Steps are serious, fun, informative, and most of all relevant, as religion should be. So get ready. We're taking the next step.
Pretty soon, all the Christian churches will be rising up and reclaiming their faith. Had to start off with some wishful thinking, huh? Isn't that beautiful? Who said that? Listen to this again. Tell me who said this. Pretty soon, all the Christian churches will be rising up and reclaiming their faith. I know you could guess, and it sounds very profound, and it certainly is. This is from our producer, Susie. Yeah, she sent me this email last night, and thanks, Susie, for letting me share this today, telling me that she was showing the Reclaim video to somebody. You know that Susie, in her alias, is a librarian. Not just a librarian, at the law school. She runs that law school library. Anyway, she was showing somebody the video about the Reclaim conference. If you haven't seen it, make sure you check it out. We'll have a link on today's show notes. It was done by the same guy, Aram Musayan, the same guy who does my videos, my AC 101 videos. But this time he made use of a drone. And so Susie was showing this video to some people who belonged to another denomination. They loved it, just loved it so much, because they were thinking in terms of using the drone concept within the library. But when they saw this video, it just sparked up some enthusiasm in them. And I won't use the name of the denomination, but perhaps that their denomination will be doing a Reclaim conference of their own. And Susie was letting me know and letting a few of us know about this. And she ended her email with this beautiful reflection that pretty soon all Christian churches will be rising up and reclaiming their faith. And the seeds were planted within the Church of the First Christian Nation. Amen. Now that's leadership, isn't it? Isn't that what we're all about? Doesn't that make you feel like, okay, that's a leading church? That's where our church should be. And how easy it is to follow, how difficult it is to lead. Why is the leadership difficult? Because you have nothing to base it on except your faith. You have to base it on this complete trust that God is in charge, and then you go for it. Anyway, welcome. I had to start it off with this because it really was just a beautiful reflection, and I wanted to share it with you, our Next Step listeners. I told you I was going to have a guest on today. Her name is Yvette Hovsepian-Bierce. We're going to wait one more week, okay? Some things happened. She couldn't get into the studio today. We're going to delay it for one more week, and it will be worth the wait. I shared some thoughts with you last week. It will be worth the wait. Today, what I'd like to do is I want to share with you some personal thoughts that I've been wanting to share with you last few weeks, because I reached that six-month mark. You know, it's been 6 months that I'm not doing parish priest work anymore. That through an arrangement with His Eminence, the Archbishop, he's given me this opportunity to really pursue my passion of doing Christian outreach within the Armenian Church. And it's been really exciting. And I want to tell you some of the, well, what it feels like, okay? On the other side of the parish priest. Yeah, what it feels like. How's it going? I think you'd be surprised. Today we are standing, speaking of other side, we are standing on the other side of the vernal equinox, aren't we? Yeah. We had the equinox. Happy spring. Welcome to the spring. And it's going by quickly, right? I just remember, like, wasn't it, seriously, like in my head, I'm thinking like, okay, we just talked about the Punxsutawney Phil. Wasn't that just like a week or two ago? No, it was 6 weeks ago. We talked about Groundhog Day, and here we are, beginning of spring. And it is a beautiful spring. I hope it is beautiful wherever you're at. But I wanted to start off today by, sharing with you something very beautiful that happened in our lives. This was last Saturday. Our dear friend Mahed Revo, that you got to know through the Next Step broadcast. Revo that we met up with in Standing Rock. He was on his way back to Armenia. Actually, he left today. But a couple days ago, he announced on his Facebook page that he was giving that beautiful Armenian flag that was flying over Standing Rock to us, to Susan and me. And we met him last Saturday morning at a coffee shop, and he handed over unceremoniously, but we made ceremony out of it, right? We had coffee and we took a picture, and more importantly, we shared some ideas. But what an honor, what a privilege. Here is the flag, the Armenian flag that flew over Standing Rock in a gesture of solidarity with the Native Americans to say that, hey, we as Armenians have a history. And in that history, there is injustice, there has been violence, there has been oppression, there has been even genocide. And we stand with you, people at Standing Rock. And we had a chance to meet with him, and he gave us this flag, and I take it with I have to tell you, and this is why I want to start it off with this. You understand how important symbols are when things like this happen. When you look at Armodoxy, when you look at Eastern Orthodoxy, when you look at traditional church, you know how important those symbols are, because those symbols are tangible means by which we understand the intangible. And it is so important that we pick up on these metaphors, on these symbols. Don't discount them. I mean, Joseph Campbell made his whole life out of those. And we've had that. We have that in the Armenian church, that idea of symbols. You know, when my father passed away, I'll never forget just how overwhelming it was. Yes, the services were beautiful. There was, you know, and you have, obviously it's your father who's passed away, and you're deep in thought with that. But how overwhelming it was when at the graveside, a military person came over and handed the American flag to my mother and said, this is in recognition of your husband's service to our country. I mean, I was choked up, baby. You couldn't hold back the tears. Why? Because that flag, it symbolizes. It's not just stars and stripes. It's not just a material. It's not just a weave. It's not just a bunch of fabric put together. No, it symbolizes something greater than yourself, right? It symbolizes a country. It symbolizes service. So too, the symbols in our church. When you light a candle, you know, people, oh, you're lighting candles. That's not in the Bible. I mean, have you heard that one? Yeah, I love that one. That's not in the Bible. Yeah, you're right. It's not in the Bible. and you know what? I've heard the other side too. I've heard priests and I've heard people trying to justify it as if it is in the Bible. No, get over it. It's not in the Bible, right? It's called a symbol. It's called a symbol, okay? We light candles. We burn incense. It's a symbol of our prayers being lifted up to heaven. There are certain thoughts in life that you cannot understand. And unfortunately, people want to do this with God all the time, right? They say, God is like this. God will do this. Stop talking for God. Talk for yourself. Those are reflections of who you are. In the beginning, God created man, right? We read this. Actually, think about it. In the beginning, man created God. Now, if I say that, you're going to, listen to what he's saying. No. Mellow out, folks. Mellow. Just listen for a moment, okay? All the ideas that we have of God are things that we come up with trying to understand something that is ununderstandable. God is beyond our ability to communicate. If you were able to define God, it's no longer God. God is bigger than our understanding. In Orthodoxy, in church, every Sunday the priest proclaims, "Vorivere kanzamanai midas yevesbanas," God who is beyond my mind and my words. You can't understand it. You can't talk about it. But we come close by using these symbols. So you light a candle, you say Jesus is the light of the world. Well, what does that mean? Well, I could get an idea of what light is. I know what darkness is. And so light is the absence of that darkness. I know that darkness brings about fear. So when I light a candle, what happens? That fear goes away. That's something I can understand. But is that candle Jesus? No. But it gives me an idea of how to understand that phrase, I am the light of the world. Symbols, right? Do I understand what America is? Do I understand what freedom is? Do I understand what justice is? Do I understand the pursuit of happiness? Well, I've got concepts here, right? These are all concepts. But when I see a flag, that to me is a symbol of a country. And so the stars and stripes for me, in my case, as an American, those stars and stripes put together in that manner symbolize something. They symbolize a country, a republic, a union, a group of people coming together and trying to create a more perfect union, and so on and so on. And so when this flag arrived to us in our hands, and it came from Standing Rock, it was a symbol of something big. And I'm very honored. I can't put it into words what that means to us. That we have this flag that was there today. Because everybody talks about, like, we've got to do this, right? Have you noticed something what In His Shoes does? We're actually out there. We're actually doing the things. I mean, you know, you can write about it, you can hear about it, you can hear people talk the talk. But how about going out there and standing out there? Being united with brothers and sisters. Being united to the extent that you can. Maybe pushing yourself to the extent that you can't, and pushing yourself a little bit in that way. But this is where we need to be. I've shared this with you many times. It's the premise of the entire In His Shoes ministry, right? It doesn't mean anything that we went through a genocide unless today you can react to the ongoing genocides that are taking place. Did you catch last Sunday night's 60 Minutes? South Sudan. Again, famine. Again, mass killings, mass people dying. What happened this morning out in London? You've got this word terrorism that gets defined by these senseless killings all around. And then you've got these people who are getting up and cheering. ISIS saying that, yes, this is okay that it happened. It's good that it happened. That we're fighting our war on your land. And this bizarre notion that somehow we are going to put an end to violence by having more violence. And it's people like the guy in North Korea, right? A wild card, right? And how do you put him down? Well, we have to have more violence. It's overwhelming. It's overwhelming. But at some point, you need to be able to say, I'm taking a step. I'm doing something, as small as it may be. People come up to me and they ask me, what are you doing? You know, I can't fight every war. I can't fight every fight. But this is something that I can fight. And it begins with personal responsibility. By you accepting that you are part of the solution. That's the whole idea of walking in his shoes, right? That I'm going to walk in the shoes of others. That I want to feel your pain. I'm going to do the tzavadanim. Let me feel your pain. That's the whole idea, right? Look, last week it was interesting. We had that Reclaim conference. I don't know if I shared this story with you. And if I did, I apologize. But I do want to say it again because I keep going back to this story. So during the conference, some woman comes up and she comes up to me and in the midst of a few other people, and she says, "Did you know that there's did you know that there's a brothel in Pasadena?" She knows that I live in Pasadena and that I've served in Pasadena. "Did you know that there's a brothel in Pasadena?" I go, "No, I didn't know that." And she goes, "Oh yes, there is a brothel and there's Armenians that are going there. Did you know that?" I go, no, honestly, I didn't know that." And she goes, "Well, what is the church doing about it?" And I go, "I'm sorry, I'm missing something over here." Hey, you guys know what a brothel is, right? I'm sorry. A house of ill repute. A house for prostitution, okay? And she goes, "What is the Armenian church doing about it?" Now, I'm thinking like, okay, she's cornered me inside this conference where there's everybody who's talking about the Armenian church. And I go, "I'm sorry, I'm missing something here. Prostitution is illegal, where you're defining it in Pasadena, and you see this happening, so you need to pick up the phone, dial 911, get in touch with the authorities, and report it. I mean, every problem can't be a church issue. You see a fight on the street, okay? You see somebody drunk driving. What do you do? Blame the church that the guy's drinking? No, you call up the authorities and you say there's somebody driving under the influence. You see a fight on the street. You don't go up to the priest and say, "What are you doing about this fight?" No, you call up somebody or you jump in there and you stop the fight. That's taking on responsibility. There's a brothel, there's prostitution in your neighborhood. You don't go up to the priest and say, "Hey, you know, what are you doing about this?" I don't know. There is one thing you're going to do. It's illegal. Go call the police. Do something about it. And you know, this kind of thinking goes on and on and on. In a couple of weeks, I'm going to be speaking at Hai Yin. It's an offshoot of the AGBU. I can't even believe that I accepted this one. I just don't do things like this. But a favor to a friend, I said yes when they asked me. And the topic, you know, what Facebook and other social media are doing to our children. What are they doing, you know? It's somehow, that's the evil. We've pinned it as the evil. Let's talk about it. And I'm going to talk about it. Hey, you know, that's a tool. Facebook is a tool. Social media is a tool. It's just like a hammer, right? A hammer, you can build a house or you can, you know, knock somebody's head off, right? It's the same tool. It's how you use it. You could swing it around and, you know, crash and mess up the windows and tear down that house. Or you can start using it properly and put nails into wood and those wood beams become the house. Built or tear down. It's in your hands. Right? Well, this is how we have to start understanding ourselves when it comes to the bigger picture in life. You know, we always come to the church and say, "How are you going to address it?" And rightly so, the church should address it. But the means by which it addresses it has to include us in that formula. In other words, how am I going to be walking the walk? How am I going to be contributing to the entire whole? And that's the part of the puzzle that In Issues takes care of. It's a philosophy. It's a movement. It's understanding that we have to place our feet in the shoes of others. And so we did that with the Indians, with the Native Americans over at Standing Rock, by feeling their pain, by walking with them. And so what an honor that we have this flag. And within the next few weeks, flag, and I want to use it to really promote some more issues of justice. And that'll be coming up. The flag from Standing Rock. We took a picture of it. Like I said, it was unceremonious, but we will definitely include that picture in our show notes today. I'm going to come back and tell you about how the last 6 months have been since I left parish priest at St. Peter Armenian Church in Glendale, and have a chance now to see the Armenian Church in a very unique perspective, being inside, not from the outside. That's what's cool about it. I'm not on the outside, inside, but looking out and looking and seeing how we can impact the world, how we are touching the world in a unique way. So that's coming up right after the song of the day. We always pick out a nice song that's kind of appropriate for the day. Tell me if you like this one. I certainly do. Enjoy. Gochnuk, the name of the group. It's off of an album they put out a few years ago. We'll have a link on today's show notes so you could check them out. Group that comes out of Paris. Began in the 1970s. Yeah, way back then. But just beautiful music. They do a lot of minstrel Kusanagan songs. I hope you enjoyed that one. That was called Gyumri. Gyumri, a traditional Armenian folk song done with traditional Armenian folk instruments. Gochnak. Check out the link on today's show notes. You know, a little over 6 months ago, I had a really very special opportunity to step down from being a parish priest. I've been a parish priest for the last 35 years. But a couple of years ago, we, as you know, I mean, one of the reasons why we have Next Step and Apostle, we kind of grew out of our condition over in Glendale, and it was very difficult to really do the bigger work out of the small confines of the church we were in Glendale. And so I asked the bishop, I said, I'd really like to push this a little bit more and push ourselves into doing some outreach ministry along the lines of what we're doing within His Shoes. And he was very, very supportive. And it took us a little while. We found a replacement for the parish priest. And I have a chance now to explore some possibilities that are outside of the parish world and really more universal within the entire church. Now, there's always this question people come up and they say, we really liked you when you were a parish priest. Yeah, I hope you did. I liked you too. Well, why did you leave? No, I'm not leaving anything. It's a change of position. And at first I started thinking, like, there's something wrong. You know, what's the bad PR that's getting out there that people are saying, like, oh, well, we always wanted you to do our daughter's wedding. We always wanted you to baptize her. Okay, I could still do that. You know, I'm still a priest. The problem is that it hasn't been done in our church, or it has been done, but so infrequently that people aren't used to it, that you can be a priest and do something besides parish priest, or more commonly in the Protestant tradition known as pastoring. That's what a parish priest is. He's the pastor of the community. And in many senses, a few years ago when I realized that we had to go beyond the confines of the Glendale parish, we broadened that field of pastoring. How? Well, electronically. We couldn't go vertically. We couldn't keep building another church and building bigger and bigger in Glendale. So what we did is we expanded horizontally. And we started the Apostle Ministry. And look where we're at right now. I mean, look where you're listening to us from. From all over the world, people are listening. And so you now become a pastor to something bigger than the confines of the geography, thanks to the revelation of this this medium. But here's something that has been really exciting. And I think I felt it last night. We were at the Lenten Vigil service at St. Leon, and it really struck home to me last night. And I was talking to my wife about it on the way coming home, because she felt it too. There was something about doing the church service that allowed us to pray. I know, you're saying, like, what? Don't you always pray? Yeah, we always try to pray. But believe it or not, it's very difficult. It's very difficult when you're running the show. No. Before you start thinking this is like true confessions here on the Next Step. I mean, think about it in anything you do, right? Whatever business you're in, I mean, there's the obvious component to anything that you do, business. And, you know, I'm using that word business broadly. It's not to mean that it's whatever your interest is, whatever your calling is. The business is just an orderly way of doing that work that you're called to do. And so when we have religion, when you have faith, when you call the, when you think about the ministry, when you think about getting the word of Jesus Christ out, that's basically the command that was given, the Great Commission, right? Go into the world, preach the gospel, baptize the people in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Teach them to observe all that I have commanded you. And remember, I'm with you until the end of the ages. The Great Commission, right? Okay, to do that Great Commission, you need a means to do it. In other words, the business model. The business model that has worked for the last 2,000 years has been the church, the body of Christ. And it's through that church that you actualize that. Now, what happens is a lot of times in the church model, and like I said earlier, like in any model that you're going to be doing, like you're a mechanic, right? Okay, you need a means by which to do. Your mission then is to fix cars, okay? So to do your mission, you need a place, you need a business model, you need clients, you need to put a price on it, and so on and so on. You are going to be selling widgets. You're going to sell widgets, right? You need a means by which you're going to be doing that work. And so you have a structure to it. You have an infrastructure in place. Same way with the church. You've got this Great Commission. You've got to get it done. Okay, and the church becomes that vehicle by which you do that work. And in any work, in any business, wherever you happen to be, you know that there are people that are called to unique positions within that structure, within that organization, that have to basically put themselves on hold while tending to the masses, to the people. And the priest becomes this person. And here's the thing. I said, okay, no longer parish priest. People can't understand that concept of you're no longer a parish priest. Well, we don't have that in the Armenian church. In all the other churches, sure, they are more mature. Why? Because, not because they've been any longer than we have. This is, you're talking about Armenian Orthodoxy, the most oldest of all traditions. But what happened in 1915? Okay, the Turks went right for the jugular vein of the Armenian people, basically, by going after the church. And after 1915, the church was basically at a standstill. Do you remember a couple of years ago I interviewed Ruben Adalian? I'll put a link on today's show notes. Do check that out. Remember, he talked about Etchmiadzin during the time of the genocide. There is no sense of normalcy during a genocide, and of certainly the church. You know, it's this haven where people are actually sleeping, tens of thousands of people right in the courtyards of the church. There's no brotherhood, there's no people, there's no church. The Turks went right at for the jugular. And so basically from the remnants of that genocide, you have a church that tried to put it all together for the last 100 years. And so what we had during the last 100 years, something very unique too, is the monks. These are the ones that were called the Aperas, the Vartabeds, who were assigned to parishes. In fact, in many cases, not many cases, in several cases, bishops have been assigned to parishes to tend to the people and become the pastors of these flocks. And as the church is maturing, we're now seeing that, okay, the parish priest needs, they definitely have a calling to a unique group of people within a geography. That's the parish, right? But now we need priests that can do other things. For instance, to be in charge of curriculums, to be in charge of media, to be in charge of youth, to be in charge of seniors, and a wide variety of ministries that need to be tended to by people of calling, namely the priests. And so we took this step outside of the parish confines, the geography confines. And I was very fortunate that the Archbishop gave me a position to do Christian outreach, and the actual title, Youth and Christian Outreach. And this is where the Reclaim Conference manifested itself, right? It was a manifestation of this work that we're doing through Christian outreach. So it's pretty wild that we're actually seeing this happen as a new venture, something new within the Armenian Church. And it's very exciting. And I have to tell you that, like as I started a few minutes ago, I had a chance to pray. And I think this was really beautiful. It just caught me sort of off guard. Because the last several months, we've been going to different churches on Sundays and celebrating the Divine Liturgy. And that's the point I want to make. Okay, so, you know, people asking, like, do you still do weddings? Yes, you are a priest. You're no longer in charge of a geography of a parish like that, but you still are a priest, right? And of course, yeah, and as a priest, you have the right, the privilege that has been bestowed upon you through ordination, through consecration, to deliver the sacraments, except for, what, holy ordination, right? I think so. Yes, you have the seven sacraments. I think the ordination is the only one that is reserved to the bishop who can ordain. And really, more so than, I mean, it has consecration in there too, which is something that the bishop does, but it's more so because of, as an overseer, he would make the decisions on that. So historically, that's how the sacraments have been divvied up. But basically to deliver the sacraments, namely baptism, holy matrimony, communion, anointing of the sick, and so on. Okay? So as a priest, you have this commission that's been given to you, and through that commission is actualized through the Holy Church. Now, there are ways that commission has to manifest itself. So, for instance, Jesus says, go out there and teach people all that I have commanded you. Well, okay, you can do that definitely in a parish, and that's probably the best way to do it. But who is going to provide the material and the information for the parish to use it? And so, if you know, last couple of years, we've been having a lot of success with the video productions. And so now these videos that we're doing are now coming into the parishes. And so you have parishes that will have Bible studies or will have Sunday school programs, and they'll be showing the videos that we produce. And that video production is made through a priest, an ordained priest, namely me. So here's a new opportunity beyond the parish. And so last night we were standing in Huskum, and I mean, I am listening to the prayers, particularly the prayer of Saint Naregatsi. And, I was in awe. I was just listening. Because for the first time, after 35 years, I'm not standing there and saying, okay, who's going to do the next verse and who's going to do it? And I saw the tension in that room among the people who had to do that. And I said, but for the grace of God, there go I, right? That was me. That was me doing that before. Now I had a chance to just absorb the moment, to be in the moment. And you know what? The words started touching me in a very different way. And I'm seeing this over and over at every Sunday service I've been going to. You know, not being concerned about the mechanics as much as doing the work. Because as a parish priest, you're basically the ringmaster in a sense, right? And I'm using that in a broad sense. I'm not trying to be disrespectful, but you are a ringmaster. You've got all kinds of action going all around, and you have to make sure that, you know, things are moving and flowing, and you know, the tigers aren't biting the heads off of the trainers. Extend that metaphor, you know what I'm talking about, right? If you're in a parish, you know what I'm talking about, right? Okay. The tigers aren't biting off the heads of anybody in that place. There's all kinds of dynamics that you have to be in charge of. So you're a ringmaster, and you're the official Christian, you know? What do I mean by that? I'm sure that every priest listening to me right now can understand this feeling. you are you finish a service and there's a lunch or there's a dinner after that worship service. And you get there and everyone's waiting, looking at you like, couldn't you have gotten here any sooner? You needed to bless the table. You needed to say grace. Why? Is the priest the official Christian? Like nobody else can say the blessing? Can bless the table? Everyone can. Okay? But we have to take charge of it. And in many respects, the priest also has to give that authority. Not in a formal sense, but I'm talking about giving away the keys as a popular way of saying it. We read about this in books such as Growing Young, came out of Fuller Seminary last year. I mean, giving away keys, giving away responsibility inside of a church. So here I am, 6 months out of being a parish priest, and I could tell you that there's a lot of excitement in it for me. I'm very thankful for 35 years I was able to do that, but I do understand that at this point I do need to transition. And I'm seeing a very beautiful side of the church that unfortunately I had missed because, well, playing the ringmaster, making sure all those things work in harmony, it takes its toll. So praying the prayer, for instance, last night we prayed the Havadov Chostavanim. Now, these are the prayers of St. Nerses Shnorhali. And I'll put a link on today's show notes. Do read the 24 prayers. If you happen to be at the conference, you know that my sister Anush did a very special presentation on the 24 prayers. And this is really a very unique set of prayers. They correspond to the 24 hours of the day, 24 verses, 24 hours in a day, and once an hour. But what struck me last night, verse number 9, I want to just share it with you. Actually, every one of them was just like speaking. They were literally coming off the page last night. I can't describe it any other way. These prayers, as I was reading them last night, they were coming off the page. But I want to share this one with you too. It comes from the 9th verse. It says, "All provident Lord, place your holy fear as a guard before my eyes so that they may no longer look lustfully." Holy fear. Holy fear. The Archbishop last night gave a small homily and he addressed that fear. And it was interesting as I listened, he spoke in Armenian. He used the word yergur. Quite different from the word vach in Armenian. Vach would be that translate to fear. Yergur is a sense of respect in there too. Fear, yes, but it translates to fear, but it's not an accurate translation. That's why I picked this one out. I wanted to share that with you. It doesn't, because when he spoke in Armenian, it just made sense. Yergur made sense. But if you were to translate that into English, it just doesn't cut it. And so that fear of the Lord is really an intertwining of respect in there too, so that you have this respect, that you understand the fear in the sense that it is something that is awe-inspiring, that is awesome, that is bigger than life. So all provident Lord, place your holy, this awesomeness, as a guard before my eyes so that they may no longer look lustfully, before my ears so that they may not delight in hearing evil words. Isn't that wild? Before my ears so that they may not delight in hearing evil words. I mean, think about it, you know? It's like people speak evil, gossiping, right? But it takes a couple of ears to listen to that gossip, okay? Not to delight in it. If you don't delight in it, what? You cut it out, right? Before my mouth so that it may not speak any falsehood. Okay, a guard. That holy respect for God. That holy fear for the Lord. To place it as a guard against my eyes so they don't look lustfully, against my ears so they do not delight in hearing evil words, before my mouth so that it doesn't speak any falsehoods. And then here's the clincher, before my heart so that it may not think evil. Yes, you heard it right. Before my heart, so that it may not think evil. Where does thinking start? We're conditioned to think that it's a function of the head, of the brain. What if it were a function of the heart? How does that change things? See, so in saying this prayer, all of a sudden, I had a chance to meditate on this idea that we are conditioned to believe that thinking is a function of the head, of the brain cells. But what if it is a function of the heart? In other words, our feelings. So that we're not thinking evil. Why? Because we have feelings. I mean, in a world that's like plagued with so much evil. If you think about it using your brain, you come to that one against one. Here, let's do it this way, okay? The brain would say an eye for an eye. The heart will say, you have heard an eye for an eye, but I tell you, repay evil with goodness, with kindness. So thinking with the heart is the Jesus thought. And you know, somebody a couple of years ago, I'm going to just take a tangent for a minute. Yeah, what else is new, right? We take tangents. Take a tangent right now on this one. Somebody a while ago explained that, you know, when in the Jewish tradition, when they say an eye for an eye, that's basically the maximum. That's the maximum. In other words, it's not to say that if somebody takes your eye out, you need to go out and take their eye. It's that if they take your eye out, the maximum you can repay them with is to take their eye out. You can't go there and break their legs too. Okay? An eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. That's a maximum. Okay, that's fine. But it's out of context in the condition that we're talking about. When Jesus says it, he's not looking for maximums or minimums. He's saying, you've heard it's an eye for an eye, but I tell you, if somebody gives you the evil, do good in return. I mean, that's an action of the heart. That's thinking with the heart, not with the brain cells. It's not the usual justice. And so the next verse comes in, he says, and before my hands, so that they may not do injustice. So injustice is now not a function of thought, of a government, of laws and regulations, but actually the doing. The doing of something unjust. Which makes a lot of sense, right? You can think about it, but until you do it, it's not a crime. So doing that injustice. And before my feet, it says, that they may not walk in the paths of injustice. And the prayer just came out off of the page. And I think that there's a necessity in all that we do for us to take time off from our usual course of events and say that I want to look at it from a different perspective. Look at it from a unique perspective. This to me is always my favorite thing about Lent. It's this 40 days that's just out there. We get a chance for introspection. How beautiful that is to be able to think about where we are right now, where we're going. What are the conditions? What are the challenges that I have? How can I become a better person? There's 365 days in a year, 40 days. We're getting ready for Easter, right? Well, even more than Easter, it's getting ready for the 325 days that are in front of us until the next Lenten cycle. In other words, Lent is here to prepare us for life. It's the small break. And I think this is fascinating because when you look at just where medical science is today, the things that they tell you, it's basically the church knew this because they weren't thinking about it in terms of brain power, in other words, up in the head, but thinking about it in the heart. Yeah, science will tell you, right? Science will tell you that you need to take a break from things. Well, church gives you that break. It gives you 40 days. Science will tell you, hey, you can't clutter yourself up with all kinds of meat because you're going to get cholesterol issues. The church says, yeah, that's fine. You don't eat meat for 40 days. And guess what? Natural way of bringing down cholesterol. I mean, there's just so many natural ways of doing it. Of course, that's not the reason you do it, but it just follows that if you follow your heart, it's very interesting that things just fall into place. And that's the invitation. That's really something that I really connected to. If I were to say in this last 6 months since I left the parish life, what have I learned? I learned a lot of things, first of all, about human nature. I mean, the place where I left, I couldn't believe what these people, I kind of put it together because once somebody said it was like a divorce, you know, you're leaving this church. And so now I understand when people start making up stuff about you, they talk about you, you know, you understand that there it's a way of compensation. But there's a lot that I learned about human nature, and we continue to learn about human nature. But as far as within the church, what did I learn? What do I learn? I learned that it's always important to have a new perspective. And I thank God that I have this opportunity to do this. And I think that you're listening in. You're walking with me. The other day, one of my close friends, parishioners who's been listening to the shows, he says, I love the next step when you get really raw. And sometimes I do get it without thinking about it. Today, I think I did it consciously. I want to just give you some raw detail. This is where I'm at right now. And, you know, God gives us the strength. It is a calling. I hope that we can respect that calling and move forward with these kind of feelings. Anyway, I'm going to take a break right now. Let Susie make her announcement. I'll come back and we'll wind it up, okay? I hope you enjoyed this. It was a little bit different. Yeah, it is raw, but you know, kind of got us going. I hope that you can apply it to your life and where you're at in your life, in your own calling, in your own ministry, and what you're doing in your life. Anyway, here is Susie.
Susie here again. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. We are now in the ninth year of producing shows which are heard around the globe. Since 2008, we've provided quality programming through podcasts, educational videos, and streams, using technology's most current resources. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy, or as Father Vosgen calls it, Armadoxy, is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties, including the challenge to bring peace to a hurting world. Please take a moment now to visit inhisshoes.org and press on the donate button. Your encouragement goes a long way. Thanks for listening and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vosgen.
Well, thank you, Susie, for that announcement, and thank you for all of your prayers, your support, your emails. They go a long way. And you've got to believe it, the things that we've been doing lately. You know what? To our prayer partners, I have made you a promise since the beginning of the year, and I don't want you to ever think I've reneged on it. It's just that I'm tired. there's so much. It's been a really, really rough few weeks. Especially with the conference. But now that the conference has subsided, the excitement is still there. Not a day goes by that we don't hear about it. In fact, last night we were at St. Leon's and a group of young ladies came up to us and just told us about their experiences at the conference. It's exciting, and it's all part of this ministry that we do that you are so supportive of. It's part of In His Shoes. It's part of Apostle. It's part of the idea of getting beyond the parish, and I'm very thankful because I know that once God ordains it, it's up to us to answer that call, and we do at different levels, whether it's the priest who does it, the helpers who do it, or whether you, as somebody who is participating with your donations, we all participate and we all answer the call. So thank you. Thank you very much for having that confidence in our abilities. I did make you a promise that I'm going to get you some oil, and I do have them. They're all ready to go. They're beautifully labeled with the In His Shoes logo on there. And I'm hoping that we can get these out by next week. So look for your mailbox. If you're part of the regular group of people who support this ministry, you know what I'm talking about. And if you're not, stay tuned because there's a lot of opportunities to hear about it. But what we did is toward the end of the year, we came up with a very special, unique blend of oils that are conducive to the prayer and meditation arts. And we're going to be sending these out as gifts. Yeah, a little bit delayed, but it's okay. I know it's springtime already, and these were made during the winter. But that's what's unique about them. This is season neutral. Yeah, it doesn't matter what season you use them. I mean, I have a bottle right now right next to me, and it is just such a unique, unique scent. It will take you to a very unique place. So anyway, I'm very happy to send these out and make this part of our ministry. And I thank you all for your patience, too, in getting this out. You know, it's like our hands are tied in many sense. It's all the same people that do the In His Shoes are the same people that put together the conference. All the same people that do the conference are the people who are getting ready for the April 24th events, that are getting ready for Standing Rock events, and so on and so on and so on. Anyway, you get the idea, right? Anyway, this is coming out too, and I just want to thank all of you for just making this all possible. It is through your prayers. It is because of the act of God, and we're very, very humbled by all of your response to this ministry. I'm going to call it a day for right now. Next week, I hope to have Yvette Hovsepian Bierce, professor, lecturer, and I know you're going to really, really enjoy that interview. So make sure you tune in with us again next week. In the meantime, we're all over the place on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Follow us along. Our prayers go out to everybody in the world. I know we had such another incident in London this morning, but it just reminds us, another reminder that, you know, we're living in a world where we have to up our prayer life. And pray for everyone, not just people in London, not just people who are hurting, but pray for everyone. Pray for everyone, because then we start realizing that we are part of that equation too. And if we are going to be worthy to be called the body of Christ, namely the legs, the hands, the feet, the mouth of Christ here in this world, then we have to be able to be connected to the head. We need to be connected to Christ. And that begins with our prayer life. Upping our prayer life is probably the single most important thing that you can do during this Lenten cycle and in general to combat the evils of the world. Be tuned, be connected to the Prince of Peace. Because, you know, when those angels heard, or the angels spoke to the shepherds and said, "Peace on earth, goodwill to men," they weren't talking about something that's going to happen in another lifetime. They're talking about right now. Peace is attainable because the Prince of Peace is in our midst. Make that a living reality. Make that something that you can connect to. Okay. So with that, let's just say, on behalf of Susie, our producer, Ken, our engineer, this is Father Voskin, inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of vpostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Take your breath. Cut out!